Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're back talking politics. It's our bread and butter. It is our bread and butter. Speaking of our bread and butter, you'll be delighted if you are a Patreon subscriber to hear that this will be the last time now, fingers crossed, on an Echo Chamber pod, you'll have to hear us do the Patreon shout out, because we're going to remove them from the Patreon feed. And you guys will. So if you guys are chipping in a couple of quid to us every month, you won't have to put up with me pleading and rattling the bucket. You won't even have to put up with Martin saying, stick your hand in your pocket, give us the few quid. You'll be able to get by it, and fingers crossed it'll make a difference for your listening experience, because I get enough grief about it as it is. Anyway, Martin, how are things?
Not too bad. I know, I think it's a great idea to give patrons an ad-free listen, Tony. I quite like an ad-free listen myself. I get killed with adverts listening to the radio and that, so it's nice to have that. It's a good step forward.
Yeah, no, I think it's a little something. Anyway, we are going to be talking politics, and we're delighted to be rejoined on the Tortoise Shack by co-leader of the Social Democrats, Catherine Murphy. Catherine, how are you keeping?
I'm not too bad at all. Thanks very much.
It's good. It's good to see you. We haven't seen you since before the last general election, and I know that seems to be. It must have been nearly 25 years ago at this stage. Yeah. Things seem to be on the up for the Soc Dems. When you read the polls, when you see the work that's been done, it's been respected across the aisle, as they say in politics. How have you guys found the last sort of 12, 15 months in terms of, in political terms? Let's leave COVID out of it in a way, if we can.
Yeah, it kind of, it's almost impossible to do that, certainly within the last year. But we had a very good general election. We went from 2 to 6 TDs, and that's made a really big difference to us, because it was quite difficult to get kind of definition where we were kind of being labelled as two, you know, it kind of had come via, if you like, Labour Party, and for me, DL and WP before that, and independent. So, like, essentially, to get definition for the party, and I think now with 6, it's much easier to do that. We just felt that there was a real opportunity, and we put our energy into trying to build a new option for people. We were obviously, as I say, delighted with the results of the general election. But COVID has been a real challenge then, because very soon afterwards, you know, we had to start meeting remotely and didn't have the normal kind of things that would happen after a general election, where you will get together and you do your planning for your year ahead or your term ahead or things like that. All that has to be done on Zoom. So it's obviously, you know, where you have 4 new TDs, normally you'd sit in the Dáil chamber and you'd say, oh, this is the way this is done, or that's the way that's done. All of that is missing. And it might seem like quite a small thing, but it's but those kind of things are quite significant. You can overplay opinion polls, although I've got to say the trend for us is very good. When you have a relatively small party, polls can be misleading. But what we really feel is a really good indicator for us is the number of people that have joined and continue to join us, and the reason why they're joining us. And it's in the main people who feel that they have to invest in their own future by investing their energy in politics in a much more direct way. And these are not people that would have ever been involved in politics before. So we have a very, fresh membership, because they haven't largely been involved with other political parties in the past.
And it's a young profile too, Catherine, isn't it? It's quite a young profile.
It is, yeah. Now, it goes across the spectrum, but there is probably a disproportionate number that would be below 40, and some significantly below that. And it's great, you know, that brings energy, and, you know, it also brings expectations, if you like, that things can happen very quickly. And very often in politics, and particularly in the last year, things were more slowly than people would like. And in some ways, you kind of feel that we've gone backwards on some things, and housing would be one of those issues that I feel that that's the case.
Yeah, no, that is the case. And we will definitely get to that. But I'm interested that you know, you've seen a spike in membership. And I know we've seen, you know, we've heard people talk about things like the green wave, and we've heard, you know, the Sock Dem surge, you know, there's all of these things going on social media. In terms of, though, the new TDs that you've added to the Dáil, is it unfair of me to ask you, how do you think the guys have gotten on in their first few terms? Because it's been an interesting time, and there's been, you know, it's hard to break through when you, even with the six seats, it's hard to make an impact. Do you feel you guys have done well? You know, I'm not asking for grades here, but give us a little bit of a flavour, if you don't mind.
Yeah, and I think that's where the trend, rather than the numbers in the opinion poll, has given us some sort of a marker. And there's no doubt that we have been moving forward, and, you know, there's momentum with us. And the I feel like the new TDs have been really quite prominent in the context of the year that we've had. We've seen the like of Holly, for example, you know, on the like of Greyhound Industry, Mother and Baby Homes, a lot of things around, you know, maternity leave and things like that. Jennifer Whitmore has done a lot in terms of the mother and baby homes, the like of the on the children's committee, and indeed on the climate committee. So they have settled in very well. Keane O'Callaghan in relation, particularly in relation to housing, and Gary Gannon on education. They haven't been anonymous, and essentially we have been trying to encourage them to be out front with a lot of the things that they're taking on. And I think they've done very well. And really, we can see that the increase in membership is kind of, it's constant rather than a spike, if you like. But even in that context, you will see spikes. And we saw that with some of the more high-profile things that the new TDs in particular have taken on.
We've had Holly and Gary and Jennifer, and they've had them all on. But I think some, like, you know, Jennifer was very good around the CETA issue as well, because we were pushing that, and she was really, you know, we were impressed where she was pushing the right buttons to try and get it into committees and try and get asked the correct questions, and working, actually, funnily enough, as I said, this brings me on to the next point, is she was working with members of other parties and none. So, you know, she was working, for example, with people within Sinn Féin and independents, and whether they were in the Shannon as just part of the climate committee or indeed in the Dáil. Have you found the party now is now, with one eye on what comes, future coalitions look like, have been able to work with other parties? And obviously we're pushing for other parties of the left, but nonetheless, I'll give you that as a broad question. How has you felt with a much enhanced party now? Are you cooperating with other parties now more?
Probably not more, but there's more opportunities because there's more of us. But I mean, the thing about it is, what is the object here? The object is to get a good outcome. Whether that good outcome is around the issue of the investor dispute mechanism that is the real offensive part of CETA, whether it's the, you know, whether it's collaborating on things that get a better health system. And we've seen that happen in the past, and a very good example of that is the initiative that Roisin Shortall took in relation to the all-party motion that was agreed, and then the committee that ended up being the Sláinte Care Committee was the one that she chaired. So we're not allergic to working with all parties and none. It's what we need to do is work towards what is going to produce the kind of positive change in society, and we certainly need that in our health system. We certainly need it in, you know, housing, right across the spectrum. We'll work with whoever we've got to work with to get those outcomes. Now, we happen to take a particular view on things that we think that it has to be, well, we think that if you look at successful countries, you look at the Nordic countries, which have largely been used a social democratic model, and we feel that they get the balance right in terms of good quality public services, a good economy, and indeed if you start looking at the one of the issues that's very much in the discussions at the moment in relation to foreign direct investment, the like of the Nordic countries, which do have higher corporate taxes, also have very good levels of foreign direct investment because they have got good quality public services. And there's other reasons why that kind of investment will end up in a country.
And with the new membership, of course, comes the opportunity to stand more candidates across the country. Is that something you're actively engaged in at the moment, setting up candidates for the next election?
Yeah, we see that as a critical one. And it's not just the general election, but for the local elections after that. And we don't know which one is going to come first. But obviously, that has to be a critically important one for us to have people properly positioned, so as that you do offer the electorate an option. And, people like to have choices. One of the things that has really dominated our politics up to now has been the lack of choices. We had a 2.5 party country, and independents were and indeed I was one for a good length of time myself, but that ends up being the default position. More choice actually brings in greater diversity, and I think we've proved that even in terms of the gender mix of both our councillors and our TDs. One of the impediments to bringing new people into politics is incumbency. So that's why you do need different political entities. And I certainly wouldn't be fearful of other new entities or new political parties entering the political stage. I think choice is going to be really important.
Do you think, based on what we've seen the results of the last election, we've seen how close it was. We don't have two big parties anymore. We have three medium-sized parties in effect, yeah. and other parties who could bridge that gap then. Is there a will, and I'm asking, I suppose, you in a position of leadership, is there a will there to start looking at planning for at least an idea of what Ireland's first left-led government might look like in the next all?
Yeah, we'll all contest, and I presume all contest the election in our own right. But the thing about it is that you naturally collaborate with people who want to see the same outcomes. Single tier health system is something that all parties are saying they'll sign up to, but there's a lack of ambition in terms of really getting on with it.
There's been one in power for a decade and hasn't actually hasn't really made any steps towards it.
I mean, you look at the parties that you're likely to achieve most with, and one of the points I was made, and I was trying to use an analogy during the general election, there's no point in being on a train if the two ends of it are trying to go in the opposite direction. You have to be going in the same direction to have, if you like, a symmetry, or if you're going to get outcomes. It's not that you have to be identical, but your journey has to be going in the same direction or the same broad direction.
There's a real opportunity there after the next election for a woman Taoiseach and a woman Taoiseach. That's a fabulous thing to happen, to go from never to both at the same time would be absolutely fabulous. We'll see how the permutations work out after the election. On housing, Catherine, you're talking about the commodification of social housing. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, if you go back and you look at the housing assistance payment from 2014, which, in the absence of a large scale building program of social housing, which has been the case, unfortunately, what has happened is that most of the supports for renting for people that would be on social housing waiting list comes through the housing assistance payment. And there's a very, very large amount of money now going into that. And it becomes almost impossible to break that cycle. We're now starting to see that, the solution beyond that looking like you know, an outsourcing model again. I raised it in the Dáil recently. We all know that, for example, the vast majority of houses that will be added to the council housing stock will come through what's called a Part 5 of the Planning and Development Act. And Part 5 means that 10% of houses are acquired by the local authority in any new housing estate, so long as it's more than 10 houses. So essentially, up to now, the local authorities would have acquired those houses, and that would have been largely how the supply was added. But what we're seeing now is we're seeing the local authorities leasing those houses for between 20 and 25 years. Now, the lease arrangements mean that you pay, you know, about 90% of the market rents. There's a four-year rent review, and then the house is refurbished before being handed back to the developer, builder, you know, fund or whatever after 25 years, and you haven't added to your housing stock. And what happens to the tenant then? And what happens to your, and you're just literally postponing a decision. But it's a really expensive approach to the delivery of social housing, and it produces a very, very poor outcome.
It's an amazing return for an investor, though.
It is. And indeed, I raised that in the Dáil at Leaders' Questions there recently. And I quoted one of the entities that's talking about the new property market and essentially, you know, telling investors that the only that their obligation only ends up, they only end up once they've paid the insurance, they needn't worry about anything else. They can, you know, make a fabulous return on the investment and still end up with the asset at the end. But the problem is, who do they make this big, gain from? They make it from society, and they make it, you know, they make it from the taxpayer's purse. You know,
HAP has gone from a quarter of a million to nearly a billion in the space of a few years. The reason that it's become the preferred delivery model for social housing, and half it was a couple of years into rebuilding Ireland when then Minister Owen Murphy, decided to tweak it and say, we'll call this thing enhanced leasing, and we'll bring it. We'll then say, you know, and actually, what bothers me most is that they actually then count that as a new build. They can actually say that they built these properties when, in effect, all they've done is sign a long term lease. And nonetheless, value for money, terrible. They will argue expediency defeats value for money, given the level of the problems in our system. But unfortunately, because you actually continue to just attract in foreign capital because the returns are so good, you push out people who actually want to get on the housing ladder and might actually in a normal situation be able to get in a position to compete. And where you get to the situation where you see entire blocks being put on the market and says one bidder only. So that's the build to rent model. And that's what we're pushing up against. What are you guys proposing? You know, that's to counter that, I suppose.
Yeah, like we saw a completely different function for a land development agency, for example. We saw that as an opportunity for a project management of a very large site where you can build, you know, a variety of different sized houses and different tenures, you know, from straightforward council housing to, you know, affordable for sale. And affordable for rent, and we saw that as the way forward. You will also get a substantial improvement in value because you will be building to scale, and you can take the risk out of building for builders by having finance in place and doing a tender for individual builders as opposed to a big developer, if you like, where you would keep a large number of smaller builders employed by de-risking.
We've we spoke to Orla Hegarty about that before, and she talks about kind of a Dunkirk approach where you have a flotilla of smaller builders who can go in and do the job. And if one goes to the wall, there are others there right beside them to step in. It increases standards. It increases proficiency. Do you think the objection to doing that, which seems a very sensible way to go about it, do you think the objection is ideological?
I do, yeah. I think there's an there's a mentality that is, that's not our function. And the problem is, it is our function. And like, there's one issue, there's one kind of the terminology property ladder. I don't think it's what most people will be thinking about. Most young people only wanted to do what their parents did, and that's have a home, have independence, have security, have affordable lives, have quality of life. And that comes with a secure roof over your head. For most people, it's not the value of their house. For most people, it's home. And that's all that most people want. We need to change our mindset, and we need to see it as such, that this is not something that gets, you know, that's increased in value and gets flipped. Most people don't sell their homes. They, you know, in most cases, in fact, we're pretty awful at upsizing and downsizing. There's, you know, and we've lots of people who would like to have the option of staying in their own local community and maybe in a smaller house.
Isn't that part of the problem too, is that everything is tied in your older age, everything is tied into home ownership, you know, your access to a nursing home, your access to some security.
Home help, taking out loans that will exceed your lifetime. These sort of things that we do, we've built it all into a private model where the house is an underlying asset.
Yeah.
And if you don't, and unfortunately for children in that position who are now probably young adults, if there's no intergenerational wealth, you're almost ruled out of the idea of being a homeowner yourself. So it's, you know, it goes back to the Taunish's comment a few years ago about go to the bank of mum and dad.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. There's not a lot of people who like, the vast majority of people wouldn't see it that way because it's not an option for them.
No. Well, if my kids knock on my door, I'm going to hide under the couch. I welcome all of what you're saying, but I'd also like to, you know, caveat that with the idea that we are in a position whereby we're in a pandemic. So, you know, housing numbers, they're diabolical last year. Absolutely diabolical. It's a huge failure. There's no doubt. Mel Reynolds put up other figures this morning that I was reading, and I'd done a thread on them a few days ago. And our numbers are similar, shockingly enough. but nonetheless, just in terms of the actual getting stuff done in this stall, in this term, I don't want to give people too much scope, say, well, COVID stops all that. How has politics been under that, the dark cloud that has been COVID and the missteps or the things they did well?
Yeah, and there's no doubt at the beginning. Well, I mean, apart from the Italian tourists, essentially, which was, I think, a big mistake. There was some things done well in terms of, like, we did cancel, you know, the Patrick's Day parades, which we've had to obviously cancel again this year. There were things that were done kind of early on, and there was a good solidarity at the beginning and cross-party cooperation at the beginning. Once we realised that we had a serious issue to deal with. And there was, you know, there was routine meetings between government and opposition at that point. Unfortunately, that has not largely continued. It's been really abnormal because, certainly a lot of people are working from home, including myself. Some days of the week, and that in itself is a challenge, although I think we're all getting to grips with some of that. But in the Dáil, the number of hours that we would, for example, sit, it has been curtailed, and that then curtails the agenda. And
there's been a serious curtailing of committees as well, yeah, in what they can do, which is really where the heart of accountability lies.
Yeah, I mean, for example, let's look at the Public Accounts Committee, which I'm on, and I had the pleasure of chatting to, if you'd call it that, Martin last week.
We did. You were fabulous.
But for 2 hours.
You weren't.
Yeah, two hours is the public session a week, where you know the previous Public Accounts Committee would go on nearly all day, and where it may well have been, you know, it may well have been possible to reduce that a bit. 2 hours means that, for example, as a member of the committee, I would typically get, if I'm not the first or second speaker, we get a little bit more time. I would typically get 5 minutes to question and get an answer from a witness. Now, there's a lot of things that are going to crop up in the future because you can't do your work in that kind of time frame. We don't have a curtailment, for example, on parliamentary questions at the moment, but we did at the beginning. That was a big difficulty. But like that kind of availability of time, because there's 23 different committees, they all have to be factored in. You have to be on the campus of Leinster House if they're public meetings. And essentially, there are things that are not being got to, that we'll have a backlog of things like everything else. And there'll be things that'll slip through that we should be paying way more attention to.
Just final thing for me now, and it's, I suppose I want to go back to October. You, the tarnish you took to his feet. You were one of the people who questioned him around the leaking of a confidential agreement and the document, and how his friend became, you know, he admitted, "I did it, but I did nothing wrong." And we've seen this. We've seen this play out, and I suppose then if we could rewind the clock back a couple of years again to the Soc Dems' idea of, you know, how they would deal with white collar crime, with corruption, with transparency, and looking at, say, a New Zealand model and accountability. We're no further along in this country in terms of how we deal with these situations. When you see things like where the prospects of how people feel, not only is there a two-tier health service, there's a two-tier class issue when it comes to some of the things we've seen, how the Beacon Hospital has treated the vaccines. We've seen the Davies stockbroker incident. And again, we've seen the tarnished his arguments that he put forward actually fall apart under FOI. The dates just, the details just don't check up. How are we any better at accountability? Are we even getting close to it, do you feel?
No, I mean, it's a constant frustration. We had put forward a proposal for an anti-corruption agency, and we modelled that on one of the... We looked around the world at different examples of where something like that worked. And it was, I think it was Queensland in Australia that was the one we thought would fit well here as an idea. It's not that you pick something up and it perfectly translates, but essentially what we do here, we've inherited an awful lot of institutions and we've inherited an awful lot of bad practice. And what we didn't do was we don't do institutional building very well. And we do need to build, instead of a lot of fragmented institutions or parts of organisations, we'd be better off doing, say, one very large organisation that has the ability to move expertise to where it's required, if it's not required in one place all of the time. For example, the Office of Director for Corporate Enforcement, like of the Standards and Public Office Commission, the like of the Garda Fraud Squad in relation to white-collar crime. If you have one very large entity that has, for example, forensic accountants, has the right to prosecute, the power to prosecute, and you build up an expertise over time, and it has real teeth, then people have something to fear. Like what was interesting about the Queensland example was, I think it cost something in the region of $20 million to put in place. But they got that back in the first year. Now, it's not that you want to get money back, but you want to show that there is a consequence And if you if you put consequences in place, you change behaviour. But one other aspect of that that we felt would be useful would be that there would be a, you know, people will do things that are, you know, unintended. And, you know, essentially to have a carrot and stick approach where you try and change behaviour by, you know, giving people, you know, good examples, training, as well as the, you know, the stick where you're talking about prosecuting. But they had that particular aspect in the one in Queensland as well. And we felt that that would fit very well here. And we did make some progress in the, you know, during the last government, where there was an acceptance that this was a good idea, but it never went beyond that. That would be one of the issues that would be pivotal for us in terms of in terms of a future government.
And I'm not going to be trite and ask you when do you think the next election is, but I do assume that you've dusted off a few posters and preparations are underway for any stage there could be an election. I think as soon as people are enough of us are vaccinated, I think it's kind of inevitable. So just to wish you the very best in what I think is an upcoming election, depending on vaccination rates.
He's dying. He's dying for a vaccination. I'm dying for an election, I should say. I'm dying for a vaccine. I just want to go back to the grave diggers. He's dying for an election.
We do. We wish you the best in the next general election. I don't think you're going to have to wait a whole long time. And we like some of the ideas that are coming from the Soc Dems, particularly an anti-corruption sort of forum that is so long overdue in this country. So thanks for taking the time to come on and talk with us. It's always a pleasure. Always.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks, Catherine. And a reminder, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And if you don't want me to be saying this crap, join us and then you won't have to listen to this part. You'll get away with it. It'll be straight out the gap and you won't have Tony say to Martin, please, you forgot the Patreon link again.
Yes.
Talk to you all soon, folks. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin. Martin and Tony speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.